Welcome to the 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade podcast, a retrospective.
Hey folks, DJ here. I just want to take some time to talk about Werewolf the Apocalypse Retaliations by Flyles Games. This soon-to-launch game is brought to you by the same team that's bringing you Vampire the Masquerade Chapters, and they just released a trailer to go along with it. We at 25 invite you to check it out at werewolftheapocalypse-retaliation.com to catch a peek at the trailer and be updated of when it'll appear on Kickstarter, which seems to be early 2022. The game promises to have everything that made Chapters endearing to us, the fans, including scenarios, investigations, beautiful miniatures, and more. With that, thanks for your time.
Hey everybody, this is Bob at 25 Years. Today we're going to be doing a review of Werewolf the Apocalypse, first edition of the Shadowlord Tribe book. It's just going to be me here today, so we're going to get through this. I know a couple of my guys are slammed with work. We're a little busy here this week. It happens. We go through a couple years. You know how this goes. Every now and again, we get a little clustered, a little bit chunky and getting stuff out, but we do get it to you. I wanted to start this off the bat by opening with a quote. I feel this will set the tone for the book that's different than what we normally do. And it starts with a simple phrasing. It says, "See now the tempest that stirs above you. Darkness is your way, the way of shadows. Thus shall you hold discontent as your ally, fear as your friend, doubt as your weapon, and the respect that comes from power as your destiny. You burn, and the heavens answer your anger with the sound of thunder." I feel that hits every possible thing you're going to read out of this tribe book, and definitely sets the tone and flavor for what we're about to go over today. And for me anyway, this is it is going to be one-sided, but for the most part, it's reading the book and telling you what I thought anyway, which is what we often do here, and we're just going to get to it. The opening comic that's here with the Shadowlord Tribe book is something that'll stick with you, I think, for a long time. There is no point in me getting really detailed with it because I want you to enjoy the comic. It's not terribly long at all. And some great artwork comes with it too. And the writing is to the point, which is what you want in a comic. You know, impactful, not taking away from what the scene is. And what we have here is a Shadowlord. We really don't have a set time period because werewolves tend to be, let's just say, if you're living up in the Carpathians, it could be a hot minute. But this one is somewhere in Transylvania. And Russia's involved, right? That's two different places that kind of meld into one in the comic. Not that it's so relevant, but it's going over a Shadowlord at court. What's going on is that there was some sort of coup that was set up where they were supposed to obtain the Sword of Vladimir, right? And they're supposed to bring this blade to court as a reward. However, as things you can expect, they go a little south. And one of the reasons here, without giving much away, is that the Shadowlord is in cahoots with a voivode. That this is a Misi lord. This isn't a simple open and shut case. They're trying to also get rid of the Turks when I read, so I guess we do know the time period. And that's an important part of the thing as well. I just remembered it now, so the time period is quite old, but it is still highlighting the Shadowlords. The effect of it is, though, is that people at court are the important part. I feel this comic outlines what the Shadowlord perspective is. You have a lord who is a Silverfang king of some sort that's sitting up there kind of dictating what's going on. You have an Arun, who's also a werewolf Silverfang, who's there as well, who is clearly enjoying the company of the Child of Gaia at court. And she is rather, we'll say, flirty. Definitely alludes to more than flirty, though. And it's all the things that you would need to be at a court to see a scene where Shadowlord comes in, she brings the blade, and she has to give the blade up. And in the course of the comic, she expects to have to give the blade up. That was the whole point. And they bounce back to her discussion with the voivode in the first place about that blade. And the voivode has some choice words about why the hell would they want the blade anyway. And that's that. Later on, you get to see what this all culminates into. But it's kind of bloody, and it shows what the Shadowlord did without really lifting a finger in this process. And I feel that quote that I just read to you kind of hammers home everything to see what was in this comic and really what's going to be in this book. That said, we get through there and we start wondering what this tribe is about. And the tribe establishes itself as a tribe of retribution and cunning. That's the thing I feel this is driven home here in the way it was written, the way it's presented. Because they start off by calling it, first off, it's a story that some galliard is telling a young pup, presumably you, right? It's always written like they're talking to you in the audience for it, or at least this book is. And in the course of saying that, this guy, you just got done slashing and kind of ruining an eye for having some choice words, I believe, about your mother, if memory serves. And you wound him. And he says, whoa, 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 before you leave, hang on, let's talk about it. You know, my goal, if you didn't get up and challenge me, kid, then I wouldn't consider you a Shadow Lord. But since you wounded me anyway and proved your point, let's sit and hear what's going on. It's cool you got that bad clave there. It's awesome that you got it. We know you went and took it, and you have it, and it's whatever. Here's some story, though. You should know what you're getting into. You should know about us. And he wastes no time in diving in and telling him about the beginning. And he says off the bat, what I'm about to tell you are all lies. And I think that's important here for this book. To the Shadow Lord mindset here, they're hammering home that the way they see things is the truth. Everyone else is going to call it a lie. And they are perfectly okay with that. They are cultivating a clever manipulative web where they dictate what is true and what is false. Now, the goal of this web is to make everyone, not them, believe they are correct. And thus it ensures the Shadow Lord always has a form of control by using this manipulation and this cunning. And to explain it to the kid here, talks about that in the earliest days, this is back when everybody was one, you know, kind of kumbaya, guy was happy, everything was in balance, everyone knew their role. You know, and it talks about the many aspects of the tribes, and it goes through, you know, the fighters, the Get loved it, and Red Talons had this, Utena had that, and we know what they represent and stand for, but they don't paint the Shadow Lords as the gods of everyone, right? A lot of times the tribes like to dig in and say that they're the kind of the star of their show. They don't. But they don't say they suck either. They're in the back, right? They're behind the power that sits on the throne, and they establish this immediately. Talking about that was their role. Here's why, though. The point of what they were, or what he's telling this pup, is that it's you have to learn to rule through influencing others. You don't have to have the title. You don't have to sit as alpha in order to rule. That's one way to rule. But look what an alpha has to do. They have to do the honorable thing. People are going to hammer honor left and right, and they use it to control you. You're going to have people going to tell you, their way is the only way, and they want to pull you to the side. And a smart ruler agrees with who pulls them to the side to have a conversation, tells that person what they want to hear, because that placates them. And then they'll tell the opposite to another person who disagrees and implicates them. But in this, by telling these, placating both halves, the ruler's doing their job by preserving the peace. However, both sides are going to be looking for some sort of effort to go towards that agenda. And here the Shadow Lord labels, that's where the beta comes in. That's where the Shadow Lord comes in, into this picture. They were ruling through influence. They would instruct the Lord to do what they do, walk around and seem perfect, be these golden children that everybody needs you to be, these exemplary silver fangs, and you're amazing and awesome, because all the other tribes, lesser tribes, as far as the Lords are considered, they need to see you being that. But they can't make the hard call. At least the leader can't be the one to make the hard call. And, you know, tell the Red Talons, yes, absolutely, the forest is yours. But at the same time, tell the Children of Gaia, absolutely, we're not going to throw out all the humans in the forest. Doesn't make any sense. We won't do that. However, the Shadow Lord then, here's what the Lord says and here's what the problem is. Their solution? Simple. They turn around and they poison, calling it a disease, that mortal populace as an idea of what they might do. And they would consider that ends justify the means. It pleases both halves. Not all the humans being in the forest and running the wolves out is a wise idea. It's an imbalance. But the wolves can't kill all the humans because that is an imbalance as well. And the humans are also children of Gaia, as all are of Gaia. Therefore, you got to have a solution. And this kind of rolls right in to what they're talking about. That ruler needed them to manipulate that so that the rulership seems tight. Like, it's a great thing. Notice what I said. It's not that anybody knows they went out and poisoned them and did this thing. They consider that a necessary thing. And don't consider it evil. It's a hard call that she would have to make in order for that to work out. in order to keep two strong allies that you have to be representative for them to still work, there can always be more humans to be made. And anyone who can admit too many of them is a bad thing. That's the point. I gotta stress that. This is a shadow. It's manipulators thinking, right? This is somebody who believes the end justifies the means always, which is more or less the tribe. Now, that's when other tribes are ruling, and they point that out. In fact, they said at this point, they are not exactly whole. The Shadow Lords aren't a united tribe here, because there's a group that do lead. They are alphas, tyrants under their own right, because this Impergium gets established. This Impergium needed to be established because we know the tale. Even they said it. The humans were beginning to get too abundant. They were kind of everywhere and whatever. And the Shadow Lord tribe doesn't waste a whole lot of time talking about it. Not like we did with the Red Talon tribe book. Because quite frankly, it didn't affect the Shadow Lords as a bad thing. When the Impergium came around, they were like, okay, why do we need this Impergium again? And more or less, as the Silver Fangs talked and everyone talked about it, it was like, oh, to establish Guru dominance. This is to showcase how amazing we are. All right, cool. Yeah, we're all about it. Let's do it. And their leaders took their roles as these badass alpha types where they could. But where they were not that way, the rest of the tribe was more or less undermining the leadership of those tyrants that they saw that were not them. Really, they kind of say that they did it to all tyrants, but really you can probably guess that they didn't do it as roughly to their tyrants, their alphas, as they did to anybody else being in charge, any other tribe. I digress a little bit on that point. But during the Impergium, which is where they get to, this they considered a golden age. It was a necessary time. It was a kind of a, how do I put that? They more or less stated in this book that the idea of having man dance to the beck and call of the werewolves was a brilliant idea because they knew what to do with that. Right? It says the practice continued for millennia and where is it? The Guru would still take what they could. The Guru would take what they desired and punish those who opposed them. This was the point of the Impergium that they saw. It was the Guru establishing themselves as the masters of mankind, controlling humans. And they were doing it carefully. And that's how it went. During this time period also is when the old gods, as they refer to the section, because they don't refer to their totems as like totems straight up. I found that unique. They call them gods. Well, to anyone listening, wait a second. Isn't Gaia like their god, like all werewolves? And isn't the worm like the antithesis of the good god and whatnot, or however you want to call it? And this is yet another fractious system of thinking and belief that happens here because it's showing multiculture is what I want to highlight. No one tribe's correct. That's the end-all be-all. In fact, to address something that one of our listeners reached out with us, they said, hey, I don't necessarily agree with you. When you guys stated that Red Talons they're like the apex of what the Guru should be thinking. And I said to myself, this is a good opinion. I agree with you. And in that context, you're correct. Except maybe we weren't clear. What we were saying is, when you think of a monster, an actual werewolf, to understand how it might think, I feel the Red Talons are the best for it. Right? Close to instinct. They're from the wild. They have that idea. They're all about killing mankind. And it definitely puts them at odds with mankind. So it does, to me, make sense of that. But I do agree that standing on it, that if you're into Guru, and I am too, I can also see you saying, well, wait a second, my Guru aren't this evil monster that you're trying to make them to be. You know, when I play them, they're different. And you're okay to do that. You're very okay to do that. But that's because werewolves, the Guru here, and Werewolf the Apocalypse are multicultural based. They come from that. You're supposed to have opposing viewpoints and do whatever. Now, me as a guy reviewing books with my team and whatnot, when we go over, we definitely typically have multifaceted viewpoints for that very reason when we tackle books and we give on information. However, it's unavoidable that when you work with a team, after a while, the team almost starts developing the same mindset as they approach the material. And so what we do is we make sure that if I have a pro-werewolf viewpoint, someone has a counter viewpoint, right? And that's how you got to understand that if you're listening to us going back and forth, you could probably listen to past episodes where you can hear one of us is deliberately being contrarian. And if you have difficulty seeing that, that means I'm doing my job and we're facilitating this and we get it going. But that's kind of the goal of it. But back to a singular review here. I was focusing on the culture of it and talking about the old god viewpoint. When a Shadow Lord says that the Red Talons had their old Wolf of the Woods and, you know, Griffin and all that being chosen for them. It suited them. It suited what they got into, what they were interested in. And that's the point of these gods. But while everybody was kind of shuffling off to these great badass totems, so to speak, they found themselves not being worthy, right? A falcon. Like, they stress this immediately. Like, the Silver Fangs had falcon, and honor was everything, and it was majestic, for falcon was regal, and he surveyed their domain and saw it all and what was there. And falcon chose who it wanted, which was not the Shadow Lords, right? Wanted the Silver Fangs. They seemed to be, you know, as high as honor type of thing, and that was kind of their thing. You know, Utena got theirs, Children of Gaia got, you know, Unicorn. I mean, I could go on, but I'm trying to grasp at straws. They would belay the point. Other than to say that how the Shadow Lords put it, they don't tip, you know, they don't really care how the tribes picked their gods because they were chosen by Crow. Where everyone seemed to be able to kind of like, hey, pick me, choose me, stand in line and do that. These guys were just doing their job. They were observing what was going on in the domains they were in, the territories they had, and they were serving as these beta roles, these advisory roles, these elders on the side that weren't in the way. A Varys the Spider type, for a Game of Thrones reference to get exactly what I'm talking about, you would understand. If you're a fan of Game of Thrones and that character, Varys the Spider, Varys the Spider, you absolutely get this tribe book. It's what they're about. Majority. Right, standing in the back, letting it happen, guiding that leader accordingly, but you're really controlling them. You're facilitating through manipulation your own agenda to see it bear fruit and letting everybody else take the credit. This is important. Why would you do that? We'll get to that. But during the Imperium, that's what they had. They gravitated to the Crow and called themselves the Children of Crow, and that the Lords moved on, right? Cultivating a sense of patience at this point, because the way they saw it, the other werewolves were just learning what they were doing. Yes, there's an Imperium, but look how they're acting. You know, I think we can't contest it very early on. The Gedda Fenris were particularly warlike. The Red Talons were particularly vicious. You know, every other tribe kind of had their own thing they were forcing and etching out and carving out of the world. And the Shadow Lords feel that at this time, they were there watching what happened with mankind, and they couldn't directly oppose anything. Whatever decision was made, they went with, and the Imperium was no different. However, they decided to carefully breed the elite amongst the mortals for what they needed. They knew that they had to have the ability to delegate authority accordingly, but to do so without getting in the way of the actual rulership. And that's mortals or werewolves, no matter what. And it's because their goal is an advisory purpose. So to do this, it's to build a network out of the right people, out of the right blood, the proper mix, in order to see this realized, because anyone could see, if they were paying attention, as the Shadow Lords are placing it eloquently, that the mortals are going to grow beyond their means. They're going to get larger, they're going to get more powerful, except the Lords couldn't say anything, because this wasn't their call to make. And at this point, admittedly to them, and a bit sheepish, I would say, they kind of felt that the tyrants in charge were the ones who should be held responsible for it. And that includes their own tribe. They make no excuses for it, saying they're the ones up there, they're the ones saying in Pergam, they're the ones saying doing this. But what happened was they got corrupted by this power. Think about it. What they're saying makes a lot of sense from their perspective, and this seems to be yet another step towards what actually went on. We know from the Red Talons and the other tribe books that paint a more fantastical tale, with the Red Talons get brass tacks. They fully admit that they were off in the wilderness away from this. They would just come to the settlements of mortals and collect their bloody tithe for the Imperium. The Red Talons were gone. But they didn't pay attention to what sort of advances the mortals had, or what sort of rank and file they were forming, or what organizations were coming up from these cultures and these civilizations that were being planted and growing. And they described them going from like mud huts to stone caves to a stone structure shaped by their hand. And the Red Talons were shocked by the weaver tech that was used. However, the Shadow Lords talk about, we were there the whole time. We sat there with them. We watched what they were doing, and we were looking at our leaders going, are you going to do something about this? Look at what you gave them. With very little room to maneuver, these people have done amazing things. And, you know, hey, on the side, which you're not paying attention, we're cultivating out of the very best of them our own means to have our own stock of breeding that we know is going to be great. But that's just a win for us. Everybody was given leave to do so, and they went to their own side. So Shadow Lords are happy. They refer to it as a golden age for that. But mankind being mankind, they rose accordingly. These people were tired of being slaves, is what the Shadow Lords say. Like, they paint a picture of you would be slaves by the Guru and the Impergium, and as mortals, you would go to their bed, and they might frenzy in an orgiastic bliss and tear you apart. Right? Or they would say, you know, you have a wife or a husband, and they decide to take them as a lover, and you're done. Like, your relationship's done. Forget about it. Because the complaint would warrant your death. It's just the way of things. They had complete power over that. They made slaves of man. Well, as mankind does, and they learned, you can't do that. Because what you do is you force them to react. Esteemed lineages aside, no matter how you bred them or try to guide them to be something else, they eventually, you underestimate them. And what they do is that these fractious tribes you thought they had were actually more close together as you were being pulled apart. Because remember, the Impergium started, they were all together as one Guru group. And then slowly, as power corrupts, and they have absolute control over man here, and they're breeding, right? They're having kids, and this is getting more populous. They start pulling apart, saying, hey, our group's over here, and we're awesome in the world. Well, our group's over here, and we're awesome in the world. But that's separating the Guru as a race from being anywhere near the slave populace to keep a handle on the humankind, right? Now, they had pockets of humans where they were, but they were kind of doing their own thing. You know, out there with your totem and your totem-like ways and concerned about Guru stuff, but very little paying attention to mankind. Meanwhile, mankind's learning the whole time, comes together and revolts, right? They get it in them to do that, but the Shadow Lords fare well. So what? They revolt, and they're coming out of it swinging and whatever. And the Guru had to meet on this. Like, the goal here was, like, do we unite together and destroy them or no? Well, the seeds have already been planted, haven't they? And the Shadow Lord saw this. They, you know, even saying, they said, think about it. You're pulling the very best for your own tribe off to the side to your neck of the woods, and you're cultivating a great relationship with them. You like people with blonde hair, blue eyes? You went off to the north or wherever you went to cultivate and make sure that they're up there and teaching them your way of life? Well, it's like not unlike building a cult. You're going to have what you have, and there you go. They're special. They're there. Now, you know where the bulk of people are at, where all the cultures mix is down below, where they were breeding and doing whatever, and those distinctions aren't really there yet. But you've spent, like, whatever, decades, centuries, whatever. They don't really refer to the time span like that. But when you think of them as a whole, you're not paying attention to those that your tribe didn't grab and pull to the side and say they were special and got to be with you. Therefore, they chose their kin, and their kin is who they're protected, but it is nowhere near the populace of mankind as a whole. Because of this, the Guru have to meet, because if they united as a Guru nation, they could come down and maybe war on man and kill man and call it a day. And that was that. Well, they go to what is greed, go to a concord is what it is. They have this meeting. And in this meeting of the concord, it's decided there's going to be peace with mankind. And this was decided quickly. And for all the wrong, well, not all the wrong reasons. As the Shadow Lords say, they blame the Silver Fangs again, because it's the Silver Fangs who lost the famous duel, right? There's a Stargazer that challenges the Silver Fang King to a puzzle duel to figure it out, to decide the outcome of what to do with the mortals, and the Stargazer wins with all the tribe allies he had, and they know that, okay, we got to make peace with them. Well, the Stargazer champion, not only did he win that, but also the Children of Gaia are on their side, and they're very relieved. And so are the Silver Fangs. But then quickly, they get to saying, well, now what you have to do. We agree to a concord, this is the outcome, but now every tribe has to go forth and serve a role function with the mortals. Our guiding them isn't done. Where we agreed to pull our own special true and whatever, now that there's this end of Impergium of containment and killing them is done, then we got to make sure that we can guide them in the future moving forward, which is the gamble the Children of Gaia and Stargazers very much backed and say can be done. And the Silver Fangs decided that this is where honor lies. This feels honorable, the right thing to do. The Shadow Lords knew and felt very differently. They felt that, honor has nothing to do with it. You need to kill the bulk of them and bring this back under heel. But since you're not going to do that, then, we'll do what we got to do, right? Because while the Impergium was going on, the Shadow Lords weren't grabbing people and just killing them, right? Bring them out in the town square and stoning them to death. Way too barbaric. They were talking about they would learn what the new human civilization laws were and how they were operating, and they would stay with the elite in that society. Monitor the leaders, keep an eye on them. They would build spies amongst the mortals to go in and serve that function. And they would find out what leaders were getting too big for their britches, and they would have them killed. Just assassinate them to preserve the whole of their crop. And that's how they went through it. And in the Impergium, they did very well because of that. They were able to keep a lid on it and the whole nine. Others were not so successful, and some got downright lazy. Like even here in the Tale of the Shadowlords, it seems that the Bonars were still negligent in their duty. And right here, it's still, I mean, it backs my opinion and theory that the Bonars and Glasswalkers, wow, my brain paused there. So the Bonars and Glasswalkers seem to be cut from the same cloth, where the Glasswalkers seem to be more worried about the new spiritual weaver spirits that are found from the growth of man that are just revealing themselves. And they go that route as a route to power to focus on. The Bonars tried to focus on mankind, but really didn't get in their way. They were more like being a part of them, but kind of letting them be what they are. Like almost as if saying, well, if we're not going to kill them, then we just got to keep tabs and do what we got to do. And hey, the children guy are over here doing the same thing. This leads to the more, yeah, we were all one tribe fraction, but how far does the apple fall from the tree? And the Concord corrects that. But the one thing of the Concord that struck a chord with me is how pissed off the Shadow Lords were. Like the Concord ends, and they more or less are in that role saying, yeah, that's interesting. We were loyal to you. We did what we were supposed to do. We killed what we were supposed to do. But at the Concord, what they were doing to man, the Silver Fangs kind of had some stuff to say about it. You know, and I won't say they insulted, but they denounced their activities. Right? They were quick to deny any involvement, accusing the Shadow Lords and of betraying their wise plan, in fact, of what went on. And that the Lords had disobeyed and betrayed the Silver Fangs. They officially denounced them, right? And almost pointing out there was a big conspiracy against them when this all happened. But that's not what happened, right? That's what they're saying. That's not what happened at all. And they're kind of adding that this is how the Silver Fangs are. But they also point out it makes sense. I mean, from this guy's opinion telling this tale, right? Remember, we're still supposed to be the impressionable cub who just lashed out at the elders, so we have to listen to him out of obligation. And what he's saying is, yeah, the Silver Fangs said that we suck, and they heard, you know, they were attacking us because they were in charge, and they can't be wrong. They're too big to fail, right? They're too honorable. They got that totem, so they're good to go. Well, then what are we? Is what the Shadow Lords were saying. If you're too big to fail, we're the ones propping you up. So where does this come from? And instead of answering it, they just got quiet, let it be, and they were just smoldering with rage. And they had a problem with it. So the Gru Nation divides after the Concord, right? They go back to their places that they were already kind of migrating to, and this time, watching man in a different light. We now got to all live here in this ball of mud known as Gaia together, and we got to figure it out. Well, in the course of figuring out, the Shadow Lords were undergoing a chrysalis. So at the time, the Children of Crow are the majority, as it said, and they understand that they had leaders who were in the wrong, these tyrants in the Impergium, and in the wrong in the sense of it failed. The Impergium fell apart. However, they're quick to point out that the Crows have to serve someone, and that's what their mystics were focused on anyway. That in the course of all this going on, the Shadow Lords are not merely worrying about the politics of the Gru Nation. They're also worried about tribal power, and they're seeking it out, spiritual and otherwise. And their mystics are in the Umbras, talking to spirits, looking for the right totem to serve them all, that they can kind of gravitate towards. And here's the thing. These tyrants in the Impergium were called the Lords of the Summits, a camp in the Shadow Lords we'll get to later. But they're credited as being the ones in charge. But they already had a totem. It's Grandfather Thunder. But to the Children of Crow, that wasn't theirs, at least not at the time. And it wasn't official, not like for the whole tribe either. It would take the Crows having to realize that there was a power that even Crow answered to. And that's how they word it. And they say their mystics went and entreated and found out this tempest existed. And it had principles established that said, you know, we may have divided and moved out to the Mediterranean, and we may move the Transylvania Alps where we took our crop of mortals and we're going to care about at this point. But we know we had our alphas there during the Impergium. We know that they weren't wrong in what they did. We just know it fell apart because of the actual leadership of the overall Gru. It just wasn't going to work out that way. But we still have to back them. And in this, the majority of the tribe was serving as sort of as betas to these Lords of the Summon. So in other words, crows subservient to Grandfather Thunder for an easier way to look at it. However, that's not all that happened. As this is going on, and they decide they're going to go to different places, there is a group of guru who said, you know, or a group of shadow lords who said, we're going to go to the Far East. That's where their journey took them. Where we had people going to the Alps and whatnot in Transylvania and others taking off. They go to the Far East because they want to pursue any known knowledge, power, that sort of thing, the spirit of adventure, but also where Crow goes. And guidance took them there. Well, as we know, this group becomes the Haken Guru. And this is the Japanese Shadow Lords. And they would turn in time to reject the ways of their Western brethren, period. However, here in the First Ed book is where they mention it, and they're right here for you to, you know, check out and understand that this is where it's come from. And the way they say it is just they went and did that, and that's their story. Obviously, it's because later on we'll get to in other supplements, but the point is here pretty clear. This tribe is pragmatic. They're taking situations and opportunities, and they're using them to advantage. Where some people might have taken a situation like that, like the fall of the forced concord, the fall of it, the blame that they took and kind of fall apart, they saw it as a chance to reinvent who they were. And where Crow is great, they felt we needed stronger God to follow, and they find this tempest, this storm, this Grandfather Thunder. And these principles that they espouse, which is that quote I read in the beginning, is what it becomes. Right? The idea that they're using deception and manipulation and working in what they call shadows to, well, it's what it is, to get things done, is a necessary thing. Now, when we talk about Shadow Lords working in shadows, I should take a note to mention what that is. They feel that a cunning beta can control their alpha, period. Right? A group of elder statement can easily frustrate the designs of their leaders, is where this comes from. So those who keep secrets can turn against the secretive ones they protect. That's the point. And if you understand that point, you get how they can't do this out in the open. They knew that to serve their leaders, the Silver Fang leaders, or whoever that leader happens to be, you can't tell that leader they're wrong. If you don't understand this, there's something that's wrong in Western thinking. And that is that there's not a clear understanding of hierarchy. You get it. If somebody's at work, it's weird. This is how it works. If somebody's at their job, they will never talk against their boss. Ever. They want to get promoted. They want to move up. They want to get bonus money, the whole nine. They have reasons to listen to that boss, and they want to keep that job. So they will never oppose the boss. One of the initiatives you have in every company is a boss is supposed to foster openness in the workplace. And this means, and the reason why you want the communication as a boss or owner for that matter, is you want people to tell you when your ideas suck, when they're not working, when they need to be improved upon and be better. That's what you want to do. In a perfect world, that can happen. However, it's not going to. People are always going to be worried about challenging their boss. There's a phrase in the Midwest, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. This is how corruption breeds. I lived through an era of people telling me that. And it's complete bullshit. It's not the squeaky wheel gets the grease. It's that the person who recognizes there's issues has to go about opening up the talk for those issues in the right way. If something's broken, you don't turn around and run to your boss, hey, this is broken. What are you going to do about that? That's what the Shadow Lords are saying here. There's a time and a place to tell a leader they're wrong. And most times, you will never, ever be able to tell that leader directly that they're wrong or incorrect or not in the right. Instead, you have to facilitate that conversation in a unique way, in a different way. And mostly, it's by letting them go about stumbling and breaking their own neck doing what they're doing. Because that leader will never recognize the fact that you, in this case the beta, is propping them up with great ideas and ways to do it. So back to that workplace scenario. You can't deal with telling the boss no, but you certainly can deal with the fact that there's a problem he's identified, and now the team has to work on this idea because he wants resolution. How do we get him to move on that and to seek resolution to do it, though? Well, if everybody unifies, then you're not the squeaky wheel, are you? if everybody goes with the idea, then that's just everybody understanding and we can move forward and do it. And that's unification, right? That's the sense of community, camaraderie. Together we stand, and the boss has to be part of the team. He'll come with it. That has its own problems and can be. But for the most part, that's what we think it works. Why this doesn't work in the sense of what the Shadow Lords are saying is that if it's a tyrant that you're dealing with and that boss is one, what you've done is you set yourself up to get chopped. You know, and in that scenario, great, I see all the people want me to make a change and say I'm wrong, and so I did. Well, suddenly, I find there's a job opening, because eventually there's always going to be a job opening. And now that there's a job opening, I have 20 people who stood against me on something that we found out later on. Yeah, sure, there was something wrong with it, but I just don't like the way it was presented. I don't like the way I was approached as a boss. So rather than pick any of those 20 people for the promotion, I'm going to hire outside talent to bring them in and break up this conglomerate that seems to be here, where everybody gets along and rubs elbows. Now, secretly, the boss wants everybody to get along because he wants to foster that openness, but at the same time, he's a human being and does not like the fact that his title should mean something more and he shouldn't contest them. At least that's the perception most people keep. And it's not necessarily a good one. Whenever people go out for beers at a bar or whatever, if your boss comes around, nobody really wants to rub elbows and tell them how it is. They're afraid to. And that's just the environments and how it was made, right? That's the process of working. What this is saying is that we rule in the shadows, which means tell your boss, this is more of what actually happens, though, in the real world, is what I'm about to say. And the Shadow Lords really believe in it. And what they say is, tell that alpha exactly what they want. They're in control. They're in charge. Everything's great. Don't worry about a thing. Then they turn around and they go meet at that Applebee's or that party or wherever they're going to meet, where the boss is not going to lower themselves to be at, or simply isn't going to stroll in because we know where he is. And that same group of 20 shows up and they have a different meeting. And in this meeting, they bring up the problem to everybody here, accepting that that's our boss technically, but we got to do something about this situation that he says is in the situation before it becomes a problem. What are we going to do? And to the Shadow Lords, you set him up to fail. You all do your jobs and look great, but you set him up to own this failure himself. Because in the end, what's going to happen is his boss is going to cut him. If everybody did their job, and on paper it seems everybody did it right, and we come to investigate and folks had their issues and their challenges, but he didn't see it, oh, well, we're going to get rid of him because he becomes a squeaky wheel, or really the problem. And they replace him and they'll put somebody else up there. Odds are they're going to promote from within. They're going to say, hey, Bob, you look at the right fit for the job. Look at that. And I get up there, but except I turn around and go, I know about the meetings now. So as different positions open up, I'll choose the right people to move up. And that's the Shadow Lord mindset. That's the thinking. That if you support them in their shadow moots, because you're a part of that shadow moot, we ascribe to a different ideal of what is of worth and is not. To the Shadow Lord, honor is not necessarily a metric they care too much about. Of course it's important and whatnot. However, they revere a type of cunning amongst their tribe as well. And before you're thinking, wait a second, Bob, technically, mechanically, didn't we cover it in the Black Sprout Dancers? Don't they have cunning as what they have to look out for renown? I mean, Shadow Lord's still in the honor. You're absolutely correct. But there's a language that we're using here. It is a type of cunning that they reveal, a quick of wit to manipulate a situation. However you want to put it, I'm using cunning. They even use cunning because that's what they mean it as. Someone with the ability to take a situation and come out on top, no matter what it is, without being the one to stand out as the problem. And that's a talent. And they go into why you're going to meet in private is because they might have to decide to poison those people in the woods. They might turn around and poison the wolves instead, though, depending on how bad they need the allies and where on the spectrum it lands. And they're going to come to that decision as a tribe. And that tribe's going to have that shadow moot to discuss it. But guess what? Once you're at the shadow moot, only that truth is discussed there. And that's where they say there is honor to do it this way. They're not there to create skullduggery and drama. That's not their point. Their point is that the Silverfang King can't understand that the way the Concord came rolling out and how he did it, ending the Impergium, is going to lead to this problem down the road, then we have to prepare for that problem down the road and address it as is. You know, it might be something, and it's just an example. that we know that there are wars coming and certain people from certain tribes are going to conflict and get out of control, or maybe a different power answers them, or some group is corrupt. And they know ahead of time that this is going on. Well, they're going to have to handle that. And where they can't tell it to the Silverfang King, who really won't hear them. Right? It's going to sound like complaining. If they're the only ones in a mood saying, let us not forget, my lords, that the Red Talon kinfolk issue, they have mortals in their neck of the woods that they've hunted to such a degree that they are now responding back in kind. You know, them being in Krynos, the veil isn't helping them as strong as it once was, because those mortals are fighting with their back against the wall. They sense their extinction, and they believe they got to do whatever they can to kill wolves in order to stay alive, and how are they wrong? Silverfang King doesn't want to hear that. Oh, that's a myth. We're Guru. We're better than that. Red Talons can figure it out. That's what they're saying. You're forcing that ruler to fall back on saving face, saving their reputation, saving their quote-unquote honor. Meanwhile, to the Red Town, or excuse me, to the Shadow Lords who go to that Shadow Moot, they're discussing that as a problem for the Guru Nation now. Where the Silverfang had his day in court and he doesn't want to hear to talk about it, he's given his decree. We discuss in the Shadow Moot and we bring it up to the elders there. And we say that this is a real problem, and the Red Talons are our allies in the Guru Nation, but they may be sliding more towards the Worm because as a nation, we're pushing them out of pocket. We're telling them their killed kin are not as important as the mortals who are killing them because we made this concord and we don't think it's right and we got to help them. And the Shadow Moon would decide something like, well, let's send out our allies to let the Red Talons know they're supported. Let's figure out a place for their kin to go where they can be protected. And let's cull the worst hunters that those mortals have, set them back a bit, give a little breathing room and time for us to make these adjustments. It's the best we can do. And hopefully this will be enough to preserve an alliance between us and those Red Talons so they know a tribe does support them. They don't have to fall. It tempers that pain and rage and anger a bit to see that there is a tribe willing to help you out. Thus, they gain honor by doing stuff like that. So they're not doing it to besmirch the Silverfang or whatever. They just know leadership. They know it's lonely at the top. They know people won't do things to sully their name or admit egg on their face or any of the sort. It's like their own tyrannical leaders had to admit a failing. That's something you never hear of. Hey, we failed in the Imperium to do it right, to hold it up here. And in that failing, we realized we need help. And the followers of Crow said, we're going to help you full time. And we're going to unite the tribes to do it. And we're going to make these decisions as a tribe from these Shadow Moots. Because we're going to do it smart and we're going to do it better. And we're going to teach you, you once tyrants, how to lead accordingly, but lead with an intelligence that includes your advisors to be stronger and be able to handle what comes, to be able to roll, pivot, whatever you want to call it, with the challenges ahead that help the Guru Nation survive. Because to the Shadow Lords, we're the only we're the unsung leadership that'll never get credit, which we're also not singing or also not seeking that credit for the assistance we give, because we know in the end, destiny will place power in our hands for all that we do. It's a profound statement. It makes them a strong tribe. It makes them a favorite of mine as well. There's very few tribes I don't like, but I do remember having an enjoyment of reading this First Ed book because I felt that I understood the Shadow Lords well. No doubt you guys have been in a game where the storytellers revealed the big bad, right? You've waited a long time, all the mystery seeking's done, and finally, the warriors get their day. And they typically are the majority at the table, right? So we'll say 3 out of the 5 members of your pack are warrior-based. They could fight, right? So here they are there, and they're talking about it's time to war and all that fun stuff. And we know what the thing is, and the Theurge says, we're going to arm you with the tools you need and get us the stuff we want. You know, and the Galliard's like, and we'll be there to fight by your side, and we're going to sing your praises to it because we're going to be there to fight too because we can. Meanwhile, what's your Ragabash doing? You know, trying to find a way in the pack to fit in, and hopefully they do. But at the end of the day, everybody knows the Aurons are the ones with the gifts to actually fight this big bad. It tends to be what happens, you know, and they're going to get so excited, and they're going to want to run over to do it. But meanwhile, someone in your group's undoubtedly going to sit there and go, wait a second. We're all going to march over there with the other packs to fight this creature. Does it seem a little simple to anybody else? And then immediately someone in the group's, come on, stop it. It's the big fight. We go and do the fight. We get the stuff. We get the things. We get all the things. I'm not decrying anybody that enjoyment of game. I've been part of that crowd. What it is I've noticed a pattern. There is always someone in that group who figures out a little nest egg of truth. Like, it all clicks in their mind watching that the big enemy revealed itself and it actually started from a smaller problem. Or there's a group manipulating it. Or there's an ST pivot that they caught that nobody else did. They took better notes, whatever the case is. But we've all lost patience waiting for this reveal. We want to go and have that fight. And then you'll hear the storyteller say something like, cool, let's go do the fight. And they run over, like, suddenly everybody's like 10 years old again, running with their sticks and their shields and, you know, running out to go beat on the thing till it's done moving to cheer, go home and sleep. But then the storyteller's going, you know, that story I planned, they were having so much fun, I didn't want to change it. I didn't want to show them what would happen, that killing that creature was actually the big diversion from that other thing that was going to happen. I don't know how to tell them that the bad stuff's rolling out. This is how I feel the Shadow Lords see everything. They're the person that in that group said, you're underestimating knowledge, preparation, and patience of when to go at something. You're underestimating it. You're thinking that because you have the power and you're seen as the most strong, and because you have that big bad clave, that it's time for you to jump immediately, handle the problem because all the spirits are looking at you to handle it. Everyone calls you a hero and they're looking at you to be a hero and you feel you got to go do hero stuff. But you're not going to use that intellect to look at the full picture. You're only going to look at the part where you come out ahead, where you obtain power, where your glory is yours. But there are people who have to pay for that war. There are people who have to get crushed as you try to fight that big bad and you roll around damaging homes, leaving sickness in your wake and everything else, and without a care in the world. And hey, don't worry, you're right. Someone has to go do that fight. But instead of it being a group to go do that fight, it's just going to be your guy and that big bad clave. And since you're the first to attack and the first to strike and everyone saw you hit first and slice clean through and wound it badly, that they're going to say that it was you who killed it. And so at the end of it, you walk away with your riches, you walk away with your fun, and you leave all the responsibility, well, to everybody else. And what you don't see is that there's a hatred that's going to grow from that. Because the survivors who lost their parents or their kids or whatever happened, they're out of home and have to rebuild a village or whatever it is from the fallout of some decaying, diseased, evil, mutant worm body, the Shadow Lords are like, well, we're addressing that. We know that's going to happen because you didn't want a careful way to adjudicate or handle that damaging fallout. You also didn't want to use counterculture allies to do it. In other words, we know the Zamis, they exist out here as well on these Alps, quote unquote, in Transylvania. And we know that they have enemies too that we share. Where they can't run into battle with us, we certainly can send them at night first and during the day come after the intel's left with their servants, use that to advantage, and do really a consistent, powerful attack that does it seems to be unending to push the invaders out of our homes and keep it pure. Beats the hell out of fighting each other, but we can go back to fighting each other afterward. And we're cool with that. That's what temporary alliances do, and that's the point of it. And that's the Shadow Lord thinking. I got off a little res there, but the point is to kind of see what it is they're chewing at, because it's very easy to read this stuff and go through here and be like, whatever, I get it. They're, you know, manipulators. It's not my thing. Close the book and you're done. But there is some heroism here. In fact, a lot of it. In fact, it's tragic for them. If you're playing a Shadow Lord, it's almost sad that you're the one who's going to deliberately miss your place at the table of heroes, because you're accepting the burden and responsibility of all the things that go into taking care of the victims in the aftermath or eliminating the enemy that you still find has corrupted one or two people. If you're a fan of a horror film, you can't name a possession film where someone gets possessed and there isn't like a dun-dun-dun moment at the end of it, right? We cast out the demon, but someone had a mark. Or we cast out the demon, but the little statue it had that started it all is seen in the back of the car at the end credits or some such nonsense, right? The Doctor Doom effect that gives them the permission to write a part two or a part three or whatever it is. This is sort of the same thing. But if you had a Shadow Lord who took care of that demon, there would be no part two. They would see it through and destroy it or do what they had to do. That's what I enjoy about it. But this Shadow Moot, where this would all take place, is where they go and have a moot to reward those people who do what they have to do to get these things done behind the scenes without throwing them forward as targets, as a tribe, with the rest of the Guru Nation. Now, Saying that, that's all the defense I could give him. It's a lot of talking. It's a lot of attempt. Because they fully admit in this tribe book that they're the ones, because of the Shadow Moon and this exists, there's a precedent here of them leaving themselves wide open as being painted the villain. They never counter it. They never stand against it. Right? It's like once the Silver Fangs accuse them, they let that stink sit with them. And it suits their purposes. Again, we're back to that point to where I want you to believe that we're a certain way. Because if you believe what I'm saying is a lie when I'm telling you the truth, that means I now know not only how you think, I know how to control how you're going to receive it. And I could get you to move the way I want to. It's just manipulation. But I digress big time. But moving on, when they get this all done, and here's a term I could use. Everyone's familiar with this. Take another werewolf situation, and I'll try another analogy. Typically not great with them, but we'll try to paint this one. Deniable ops. We've all heard this term, right? There are operations that governments take that don't hit the paper that are not necessarily them as the good guys. Why I'm going to help you with, the popularity of the Suicide Squad points this out. It paints, and DC World paints the American government as demons, practically. That we're going to have someone that's going to sit back in the government, form an organization that's going to take super beings, and they're going to do the most evil things they can do to clean up a little good. However, that good is constantly mistakes that we made as the American nation that our citizens can't know about. Because the common American citizen has to believe that they're John Q. Law cowboying up, honorable, and awesome. They have to believe it, because if they knew the sacrifices being made behind closed doors, they would fold up shop. They couldn't take that truth. They couldn't handle it, that it wasn't that case, right? It's supposed to be American as apple pie, not American as the rotten worm that exists in the apple in the first place. That's the point. And so Suicide Squad, you can watch to check that out, and it's funny, by the way. But the point is, when they go through the film, it's always the bad guys in some way being betrayed, screwed over, attempted to be screwed over, whatever, cleaning up the mess left behind by this government. That premise, is what I'm trying to nail home when I talk about deniable ops when it comes to what the Shadow Lords do. That's basically what they do with those Shadow Moons. It's another way to look at it. And it's an easier way to get that, right? Your tribe's going to go there, be told what they got to do. Don't get caught, because if you do, we never told you to do anything. We never met in a cave in a remote place that we told you that you had to be the one to actually wound the Silver Fang out in the battlefield with a misplaced throw. We didn't tell you to do that. It's just a misplaced throw. I don't know why you would say that. We'll work with you to improve your aim. We understand that you were only a rank one werewolf as of last month, and that you went from a cub recently to that. How could they expect you to jump in that battle and participate, regardless if numbers were low? We think it would have been wiser to have you off the battlefield and protecting the very last vestiges of where our kinfolk had escaped to. But Silverfang King insisted everybody to be involved, and you were there, and he got wounded in the fight. It happens. I mean, we hope he pulls through. Oh, he's not going to pull through? That is tragic. Tell you what. Happenstance. We have a healing poultice that we've been hanging on to. That's actually a relic from the days of the Pure Lands that we uncovered. And we've had it for a while now. We're going to bring it to you. Oh, what do you mean it smells like blood? And then it's worm-tainted. It's not worm. Do you want it in the liver? No. That's what I'm going to ask you. I mean, we just told you we uncovered it. We just had it, but we know it's a healing spirit. It might have some worm taint to it. That doesn't mean it's evil. It just means we haven't cleansed it. But he's going to die in 5 minutes if we don't put this on him. Oh, yeah, sure. We'll do it. Cool. Well, he has to drink this first. That's part of the rite. Now he has to put the poultice on. Okay, he does. Okay, he feels stronger, he says. That wound healed miraculously faster than anybody thought. What's kind of the strength of the healing power that they had? Meanwhile, back at the ranch, that same person who instructed them to do it and to do all that walks out and goes to the city and gives the $100,000 to the vampire who helped set up that whole ruse. Thanks for the blood and the means to make this look right. And the access to the history museum to get the old things that put it together to make it happen. You don't know what I needed for. You don't need to, vampire. I gave you what you needed. Here's your money. Here's what I got. Deuces. What were they really doing? Humble the Silver Fang King to realize that you shouldn't make poor choices that put the wrong people in harm's way. For whatever reason. Or whatever purpose they need him wounded for and out of the way so they can get something done. But they certainly didn't want him killed. Although if that happened, eh. But they certainly don't want that to get out, that they set that up, that happened at all, that remotely went the way I described. And so that's the purpose of it. Now, all that being said, how does a player decide that they're going to play this weird, manipulative, at times seemingly divided group and to make it happen? Well, I suppose before I do that, I should point out a cool part here. Remember I told you this is a guy talking to a cub who had scratched him across the face, disabled an eye, and the cub had to sit and listen to his story as he was waiting. My favorite part of this, to get an idea further about the Shadow Lord tribe book, is the fact that when he's done telling his lie, literally the section said the lie is complete, he also tells him, listen, don't worry about looking for that clave you used or you took and we're going to use on me, and you've been trying to get me to use it this whole time, and I know I goaded you into a fight, kid, but look, I need you this close so that my Ragabash buddy, my New Moon, could sneak up and steal it from you. Don't even bother looking for it. It's long gone. And I know you were told to go steal it from a Fianna elder at that other place. And yeah, you did. And it came out. And I know that's a thing. But look, don't worry about it. Because my eyes healed now. I know where I'm at. And look, if I jump off a cliff, you're going to follow me? I'm a child of the crow. If I jump off that cliff, I'm just going to fly away. Would you? Gives him a wink, a nudge, pushes him, and takes off. Because he could kick the shit out of that cub. He could the whole time. And he leaves. Well, the very next section is him running over, and the guy who originally tasked him to go and get that clave in the first place goes, what do you mean the guy told you his name? And he says, yeah, the guy who did this to me said his name is Vaclav Stormcrow, Galliard of the Shadow Lords. And the guy he's talking to is like, yeah, I think you were lied to again. I think somebody lied to you again. Listen, I don't know any Galliard named Vaclav. Like, it's a weird name. I've never heard of that around here. But look, I should probably tell you how this works. Let's say I did know who Vaclav is. I would still tell you I didn't know who he was. But I certainly wouldn't admit that we had you go, and by had you, that someone in our tribe had you go and steal a clay from another girl. That just shouldn't happen anyway. The truth is that guy misplaced it. We know that Fianna Elder misplaced it, and we know you didn't take it. We just know you were helping him look for it, and you couldn't find it. And we know you didn't find anybody to had it. So it's good on you. So, I mean, you should really calm down here. You're very keyed up. We understand that you could be pissed off about this series of events, and you want a conspiracy. But there's no conspiracy. You're just, you know, you want to do well. You want to impress. There's no time to do it. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll drink and we'll tell you further about our history. And to that end, I'm kind of making the distinction not to go through this punch for punch, for the simple fact that I feel that most of this is going to be necessary for you to read about. Right? For those of you who liked most of what we said right here, what I said right here, understand that they get into a lot. Their take on Rome, for instance, and what happened there. They get into the Dark Ages and what they did through there. Like, calling it the glory of Rome is an interesting thing entirely, especially when you consider the fact that that was considered a dark time. They study the classics, as they say. And here's what they consider the classics of Rome. Nero, Caligula, right? Just to name two of it. And Caligula alone should tell you, wait a second. You were studying tyrants? That's what you're considering? Or you were helping that situation? Of course they were. That's their point. If there's a tyrant and they exist, you got to remember a child of crow considers it their duty to go there and undermine what that tyrant's doing to get what they want accomplished to the better good. And if it undermines their authority, fantastic, as long as it's not blamed on the crow. That's the point. Get as much as you can from it without really implicating yourself or being in harm's way. You may wonder why that's done, and you're fair to do it, but it's to say that there are many ways to fight a war, and I think the Shadow Lords are trying, the author of this book is trying to hammer that home, that these guru take it upon themselves to do the things that aren't considered heroic, right? You could play Werewolf the Apocalypse, and a lot of times people play and they do these huge, glorious, heroic things of steeped in honor and amazement on fantastic, almost Arthurian legendary tales of whatever to accomplish and kill that big, bad worm thing. And yes, Werewolf's part of that, and it has aspects of it. But I feel that what they're trying to hammer home with this tribe specifically is that there are more ways to fight that big bad worm thing than the Glory Hound way. We need our Glory Hounds, that's the point. But there are more ways than one you should do that. And for those looking for a history that's succinct and to talk about the fact that they do have that Vladimir Dracula in here, they do. Good old Vlad Tepes. He's in here. And they talk about their relationship with him. And I want to say, it's kind of honest. There's a lot in here. One of the things I'll say that is simple here is Dracula's not what you expect him, at least in their eyes. So Vlad Dracula had a powerful hold for the Shadow Lords and what they did. They talk about the fact that he was a tyrant's tyrant. That Dracula really was he was the tyrant that the nation needed at the moment. For instance, they credit him with trying to unite Wallachia with their cousins, their Moldavian cousins, and keeping them there, you know, or Transylvania as well, thrown in that mix, and keeping them whole. And because of that, the wars happened. And what it is, you had invading Turks coming in and saying it to be one way and whatnot, but they focus on the fact that Vlad Tepes took them all on. Right? Tyrant he may be, but he was defending everyone in the way he knew how, and they respected him for it. The Shadow Lords watched as he took to the field with what people he had to wage war, but this is after he set examples. When they sent people to give him gifts to talk about peace, and in other words, you do what we say, we'll take care of you as a ruler, but your people will be subjugated, he cut off heads. He made examples of them. He tormented these people that were sent in as a warning. Did it as a warning. And when, of course, they're going to bring their army in to bring him to heel, and he said, I will meet you in the battlefield, and he did. And those he met in the battlefield, he made a horrible force filled with impaled bodies, earning his name that threw him up there. But what you don't know is the Shadow Lords were impressed with the ruthlessness of this man. And when he became a Zamis, they did not back off their support of him. The fact that he became a Zamis was showing that the old voivodes of those mountains, they respected him as well. And at this time, the Shadow Lords and Zamis were united insofar as to say they were defending their home turf no matter what. As they saw it, the Shadow Lords were the very best of werewolves and the Zamis were the very best of vampires. It only made sense that they would see alliances where others would fear what they were and heap, you know, rumor and worse on it. We all know the Zamis are a very nasty clan, willing to do what they can to protect their precious Carpathians. But now you know the Shadow Lords meet them in that passion to do the same. They cite the Sept of the Night Sky, which is a badass sept that they have as being targeted. At this time, you had werewolf shock troops from the Shadow Lords literally taking to the field of combat with Vlad Dracula, as what they say in this book. That's what they had to do. They went out there and made it a point. They weren't conquesting. It was if you came and brought your hundreds of thousands or whatever it was in these fields of battle, you would know what terror is. And Vlad served to protect the veil because whatever carnage happened on that field of combat from those guru simply was heaped up on the carnage reputation that Vlad already had for himself. You know, he's the dragon. He's the feared one. And because of that, you had Zamisi applauding. You know, you even had the begrudging respect of a lot of the Shadow Lords. However, that was only a begrudging respect. There were others who felt that it had gone too far, that you were literally siding with the worm when you are up there doing that. You can't do that at all. And they were listening to the rest of the Guru Nation say the same thing. Complaint after complaint after complaint until eventually they got tired of complaining and they came over to do something about it. Well, it would be in the backdrop of when that infighting starts and the werewolves come to deal with them and they come in and weaken the Sept of the Night Sky's hold and take them off the playing field. And now the Shadow Lords have to turn fully to defending the Sept of the Night Sky from their own guru. They were in the wrong to a degree. They all weren't wrong is what I want to hammer home. It's a very difficult situation to talk about because there isn't a clear you're a bad guy. Because to me, you're defending your home. Who wouldn't do whatever it took to defend their home? And I think that's exactly what Dracula, he represents. He represents to do whatever it takes to make sure that where your family lays their head is warm, there's a roof over their head, they have food in their tummy, and safety all around. Everyone deserves that sort of thing. But if you're here to take it from me and my family, you will have to go and do the very worst. You have to outdo what I'm willing to do. And Vlad was showcasing nobody could do what he did. Enough so to inspire vampires to embrace him and back him in his war and werewolves to join the field because they were impressed. I mean, that's some stuff. I honestly like that version of what's said or how they put in First Ed there because it paints that picture of why when the Sept of the Night Sky gets attacked, And we learned that from previous Amis books. That is what happens, right? When they get attacked, those werewolves go quiet, like almost disappear from the book for a while, from canon. And that's because while that goes on, the Amis go berserk. They go ballistic because with the werewolves coming in to attack any and everybody, they feel betrayed. That's not what went on, but the Shadow Lords can't tell them to the contrary. So they begin warring with everybody in the Carpathians, and it's just an all-out war for everybody. Well, during the day, you no longer have werewolf shock troops supporting Vlad Dracula. And Vlad Dracula's not even on the field anymore. Instead, the Ottomans come in and raid and do whatever they're going to do, and now the mortals have no hope of fighting that back because, well, your number one stunner, or the Sept of the Night Sky, is no longer backing you. Well, this serves fine for the Silver Fangs, right? They're over in Russia, see that happen in Sept of the Night Sky. You know, it's not too far from Russia's border because they're up in the Carpathians, and that's just on the backside, and they're looking at it, right, from Russia. And they decide, well, hey, guess what? Since they lost it and it's now fully fallen to the worm, and we know it has, we'll go and take it back. We'll take it back and rescue those Shadow Lords who are trapped up there still trying to fight the good fight. And you could actually look in the Transylvania by Night Dark Ages book, I believe. It might even be the companion where they talk about the, I think it's the Bassarab. I'm going to kind of quote that there, but really look that up. I'm going off the top of my head. But there are bloodlines that were formed, and Zamis who deliberately were torturing and figuring out a means to take kinfolk of the Shadow Lords and make them something worse, nefariously, you know, working off of that fall of the Sept of the Night Sky. And the Shadow Lords take that defeat as that's what happens when what they're doing gets out in the open, right? They should have had a shadow moon about supporting that guy, Dracula, but couldn't because they were impressed. And those who stepped up to help, they didn't see any wrong in what they were doing. And those that Sept the Night Sky really can't argue that they were doing that. They knew why. But the Silver Fang sees the day come in and rescue, in quotation marks, Sept of the Night Sky back to sort of subjugate and try to set that back up again and begrudgingly, if you want to say that, stay there for a while. And I believe it's a, well, the Shadow Lord's got to fight to get back. You read that, it's another book, but there's definitely a tale of how they have to manipulate, betray, and set up an assassination of a Sept leader to get their rightful Sept of the Night Sky back under them. And they're justified in doing it. Now, the interesting part about all this is that it goes in depth telling you what the Zamis, or not the Zamis, but the Venture and the Asimites were doing. Right? The Venture coming through a conquest, still trying to get it done. You have the Asimites apparently sneaking in with the Turks, according to First Ed, coming in as well. And a Treaty of Tyr has to be formed to try to stop this infighting. And that's on the back end. And that's a good thing for them. Camarilla's getting formed, and to read that in a werewolf book is weird. I'll let you know right now, if you're a vampire fan and you read this as a werewolf tribe book, you're going to go, this really feels like a vampire book at this point. But it should, because the author is hammering home that the Shadow Lords do not treat dealing with the kindred like common parlance does. They saw a necessity. They did not see the Zamis as bad until they were forced to be bad against one another. And it ruined them for all time. Like, they never bridged that gap again. That's what immortality does. The Zamis never forgave them for the betrayal that led to the Sept of the Night Sky and Dracula's fall. And even say, they lament the fact that, man, I wonder what would have happened if we would have stayed supporting that guy and it stayed the way we wanted it. Would have been something else. But this book has that going for it, that it bridges that gap between vampires and Garou to kind of see that there is a precedent to certain allegiances and plots being run with that and how it can work. And it continues on. Deep stories of the Zamis, mentions of them, rolling on through of what you can do if you're going to run a Dark Ages game and go through that, why you would include Shadow Lords and how they fit. And I think it's a smart play on the author's behalf of how to kind of keep that in the story, bridge those two worlds. There's a lot of people who feel some type of way about it, but really when it comes to certain tribes, it's a given, right? And with that, you have your tribal politics in here. You do have the Lords of the Summit mentioned, Bringers of the Light camp, as well as others. We're not going to get into that because I feel we talked about the bulk, right? The Children of the Crow is a big one. And so is the Lords of the Summit to a degree, to understand that tyrannical way they run things. But they have other camps in here too, and a brief mention of the Haken Garou. And that you'll find in the First Ed book too, enough to wet your whistle as to origin stories and what goes on. As far as another camp here that's a favorite though, I will... another two. You have the Mask in here, and it's interesting because they're rumored to forming an alliance with a few of the remaining Nyctaku. Now, if you remember, the Nyctaku are allegedly the vampires hunting the Nosferatu and the Nosferatu clan, right? They're more vampiric demigods that are running around allegedly sneaking in the dark to devour the Nosferatu. And to say that the Mask are a camp that are in here allegedly allied with them, tasked to go do it, kind of makes it terrifying to even think of that. And it's in there. Because the length of this already, I'm not going to get into it for what goes on and we're going to end it, but I definitely want to. Think I should. I might do this in another retake to go through and finish this out in another way. But because it's just me in this review, we'll come back to you with more people on it, more than just me. And we'll talk a lot about certain mood styles of the tribal politics and whatnot, and leave it for a supplement when we begin focusing on tribes as a whole, probably around when we start doing revised tribe books, getting in and talking about how they stack up to one another in the revisions and what you can do with it, right? Because you don't really need to do the history again if the changes are all focused on how they operate and comport of each other. But to say it is in here is an understatement as to how they view, they view Renown and approach it. With that, folks, I'm going to let this go. It's been on long enough, as they say. I do appreciate you bearing with, and we'll return to our normal grouping and people coming out here next week. I appreciate you guys listening to me go through this, and tune in next time. Until next time, thank you.
Thank you for listening to our 25 years of Vampire the Masquerade podcast. If you liked what you heard, please reach out and let us know on Twitter at 25 years of VTM, at our email, info@25yearsvtm.com, on Facebook at www.facebook.com/25yearsvtm, or on our website, www.25yearsvtm.com. If you would like to support us, we can be found at patreon.com/25yearsofvampirethemasquerade.